When we think about legal issues related to our pets, to our dogs, we tend to think about dogs barking too much, dogs biting the neighbor, that sort of thing. It's far more complex than that, as we will learn in this episode of Good Dog with attorney Carolyn Matlock, who's the author of We've Got Feelings Too, and also the managing editor of Animal Legal Report Services. Carolyn, welcome.
Thank you, Joanne. It's great to be with you.
How did you get involved in all of this?
I've been involved with animals and their health and well-being since I was about 12, and boy, is that a lot of decades ago.
I won't ask.
I was about ready to tell you, but I figured, oh, what the heck, I'll just say decades.
So is this part of the animal rights movement, per se, or something very different?
Many people would see it that way. So the short answer would be yes, but I feel that there's so much knee-jerking still around rights per se. My background is science, corporate, regulatory, and I wanted to approach it with something, a solution to recognizing that animals are feeling beings. I wanted to do that legally. So what could the, quote, establishment as it is now today buy in terms of being able to take the next step toward greater respect for our companion animals?
Because was it interpreted prior to this as though our animals were just property?
Definitely, and they still are. Most courts would agree and do make rulings under the fact that animals are plain property. If I were to take my dog, Spirit, to the corner, and gosh forbid I try to sell him, and I take my favorite living room chair, and I were sitting in front of the judge, and the judge would say, what is more valuable? What will bring more money, the chair or the dog? And that is what the dog, if the dog was worth $20, that's what I would receive. If the chair was worth $40, I'd get more for the chair. Right now, as we stand, there is no way to legally impart the feeling that dogs and cats, our companions, our family members do have feelings and are different from that chair.
And how does this play out? What would be an example of an issue that would be before the courts where this would be a factor?
Many custody battles, wills, trusts, and estates. If I wanted to leave someone some money to take care of my companions when I died. In custody battles, many people are now single and approaching the age where, or their children have left the nest, and they have animals, companion animals instead. Now, I personally do not think of my companion animals as children. They are my family members, and I feel strongly that they are my family members. I almost think it defeats the purpose to call them my children. They're not. This is an insult to their abilities. Having said that, if I had some kind of argument, a custody battle over one of my companions, the judge would look at that companion solely as property valued like a chair or a couch, rather than, gee, who takes better care of the companion animal?
So are you fighting to get these laws changed or interpreted differently?
I want people, you and I, who own and love dogs and have a problem, because you just asked me, how does this play out? Let me just say that every problem, legally, that you and I might have, animals can have. So it's not just the barking next door, it's the FedEx truck hit and killed my dog in my own driveway. It's every problem, it's wrongful death. All kinds of things come up, and they're the same problems that we would have. Only now, animals are judged merely as plain property. So what I would have people take away with, and these are folks who love their animals, who love their dogs, would say to a lawyer, should they come across any kind of problem with their dog, I want my dog treated in court as a sentient or feeling being, as at least sentient property. My dog has feelings. We know this.
So do people hire lawyers to defend their dogs in court?
Definitely. 86 law schools and growing now teach animal law. It's one of the fastest growing areas of law, not only in the United States, but it's also growing in other countries, Canada and Britain particularly, New Zealand. So yes, it's worldwide.
So when you talk about animal law, what are some laws on the books that relate specifically to animals?
Well, most communities have cruelty laws, and most states, 48 states now, call some form of cruelty a felony, which of course is punishable much more strongly than a misdemeanor. However, there are other laws. I believe it's now 19 states make allowance for a person to leave something for their pet in their will and recognize that as a legally supportable act. There are laws occurring now. I mean, we have all have our common leash laws and things like that and bite laws in our own communities. Insurance companies are looking at bite laws constantly. And some of you might have had your insurance company ask, do you have dogs? What kind of dogs do you have? In Michigan, there was a case where a homeowner tried to get homeowner's insurance, and because she owned a pit bull, she couldn't get it. What? And when she took that to court, Michigan statewide said there will be no breed discrimination for insurance purposes in Michigan.
Pit bulls really get a rough time, don't they?
Pit bulls and, of course, black dogs, too.
What is with that? What is with that prejudice against black dogs?
Black dogs tend to not be seen as well in cages in the animal shelters or the humane societies. They may not be the one that your eye is first drawn to. It's harder to read their expressions sometimes.
Well, they don't photograph well. I'm joking here, of course.
Well, that's about it. There are whole groups that are trying to specifically get black dogs adopted. Just raising people's awareness that black dogs get a bad rap is a good thing, just because they shouldn't.
Sure. Absolutely. What are some other cases that have been before the courts that you found particularly fascinating or precedent-setting?
Well, one of the cases in my book happens altogether too frequently. Now that we're traveling, and a lot of us are traveling with our pets, one of the true case in the book goes into the fact that an airline lost or mishandled and overheated a golden retriever that was in the hold of the airplane. So that's one of the most interesting cases, because the attorney that took that case tried to get pain and suffering and emotional distress for both the dog who had to be euthanized and the dog's owner over the death of his dog, and was unsuccessful. But it goes down in the annals of animal law as a very famous case. That was one of the first cases where the dog himself was put into the title as a plaintiff in the case, as the dog's name, now deceased Golden Retriever.
So from your perspective, this was a step in the right direction. Even though this attorney wasn't successful, it at least gets the ball rolling?
You bet. It points to the fact that, once again, the airline saw that dog as a suitcase, a piece of property, and knew very well that its limits were $1,250 or whatever the baggage claim limit might have been at the time. So again, animals as property, not recognized as having feelings and emotions, nor ours for them. So I think the most interesting cases and the ones that we report on in my animal legal report on a bi-monthly basis are those cases that push the envelope with recognition, and some judges and lawyers are trying to do this. There's two cases that come immediately to mind. In Vermont, the Sheely case, where the Sheelys brought their dogs and who ran over to the neighbor's property for just a moment, and the neighbor shot the dog. That's an ongoing case. There's another case ongoing, several cases ongoing, where the pet food industry, for example, all the class action lawsuits that are taking place around the country, this is going to show people that their animals aren't worth a whole lot in the eyes of the court. So they're now consolidating those cases, and I'm working with some of those attorneys to try to stretch that envelope to recognize that, hey, these companion animals are our family members. And veterinarians would do well to take notice that I think the number one mistake they make in thinking about those of us who are lawyers in the field of animal law is that we're in it for the money, and that is just so not true. They're making a grave error in not working with us to develop the worth and the bond that we feel toward our animals.
So is your animal legal report geared to attorneys, or is it for the lay public?
It's for animal welfare groups. It's for the lay public, very definitely. We shorten the cases. We say, here's what happened. Here's the result. Here's what we think about it. If you want more information, here's how to get it. And we do probably 7 or 8 pages every 2 months, probably 1.5 cases per page. So there's quite a number of cases that are coming up. When we first started, we thought, gee, are we going to even have enough cases? But now we have altogether too many, especially, unfortunately, with some of the veterinary malpractice cases that are looming across the country, and as well as the pet food fiasco.
Is there malpractice insurance for vets?
They have malpractice insurance. It's my understanding that it's right now an average of only about $200 or $400 a year.
Because they don't expect to have to use it.
Because they don't have any liability, really, because pets are worth nothing financially or economically, even though they certainly are encouraging and profiting from the bond that we feel with our animal companions.
Interesting. So your report is available online. Is it by subscription?
By subscription for $49.50 per year, libraries for $450. And yes, it comes to you direct to your inbox online every 2 months with editor's insights, which I think are very important. Our editors are very well known in the field of animal law and veterinary medicine.
So, Carolyn, if people are interested in checking this out, where would you direct them?
www.animallegalreports.com.
That's pretty simple, animallegalreports.com. And tell me a little bit more about your book, We've Got Feelings Too. Is this kind of a compendium of some of the best cases?
Well, it started out as a 350-page book geared to lawyers about 10 years ago. And I thought, lawyers don't need this as much as those of us who hire the attorneys who have had a problem with our pets. For example, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the area I am in, we just had another case where our local police shot and killed a resident dog. Is that wrongful death?
Why did they do that?
They felt that the dog was threatening them, and they needed to go on the property. It's a very, very, unfortunately, common occurrence right now, of course. And I'm not saying just our police here. It's a common occurrence, of course, across the country. Right now, dogs being worth nothing monetarily, really there's no nothing to even hesitate about if an animal seems to be threatening an officer.
And since this program is global, how is this issue viewed worldwide?
It's very interesting. Canada may pass some legislation that does recognize that animals are sentient or feeling beings. The European Union already calls animals sentient or feeling beings in their European Union treaty, in recognizing the welfare and trying to improve the welfare of animals. There are lawyers taking cases. I had a report of a lawyer in, I believe it was India, who took a case for elephants because they needed to wear reflectors so they didn't get hit on the roads. I mean, it's just amazing what we are doing as an international community.
It's difficult to imagine missing an elephant walking down the road, but be that as it may, they are dark gray in color, and I suppose at dusk they might blend in with the asphalt or something.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, I just returned from a trip to Southeast Asia. I was in Thailand, and I noticed a tremendous number of street dogs everywhere. Here in the United States, when we see dogs running around by themselves, I don't know about you, but I get pretty cautious and don't necessarily want to walk right next to them because I just assume that a dog who's not with someone who doesn't have a collar on might be, I don't know, I'm going to say the word vicious. Is that a bad word to use with you?
Not at all.
Okay, so might be a vicious dog. Every single street dog that I saw in Thailand was either friendly or couldn't care less that I was walking right next to him or her. This is kind of interesting. I don't know if we've created problems that dogs just, if left to their own devices, are perfectly peaceful. It was just an interesting observation.
It's interesting globally in this country, and we're getting a little bit off the track, but we've certainly been looking at Rottweilers and Pits who get a bad rap, and unfortunately, it's the owners behind their breeding that have created a massive number, I think, of dogs that could potentially be pretty threatening. And also, having been in the Caribbean and various places I've traveled, there are dogs who sort of are on their own on the streets, and they all kind of start looking like each other. We even have that happening in the North Carolina mountains nearby. These dogs seem to be long-haired for the cold winters, black, and medium-sized. They're just called mountain dogs. And unfortunately, I'd like to see all of the Russia and China. China's trying to clear its streets of all its dogs in ways that I won't even want to go into. In order to prepare for their Olympics. This is a large concern about what in the world, how they're killing off all these street animals and what they're doing about it, to, as well as the United States. We've come a long way in the United States toward no homeless animals, but we've got a long way to go.
You know, it's interesting. You said we were getting off track, and yeah, we were to some degree, but also it seems to me that it's vicious animals often that will lead to people feeling entitled to shoot an animal who walks onto their property. It's fear that's motivating that. So there really is a connection and almost a, again, to use the word vicious, a vicious cycle, I think, that forms where people are mishandling animals, breeding them to be vicious, which causes fear in the population, which causes people to feel entitled to be violent when approached by an animal they don't know.
I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. However, we had a case here that what really gripes me is that the animal is basically, the dog, let's say, is basically guilty before proven anything. In other words, I hate to hear of these news stories where the dogs are, someone is afraid the dog was vicious for whatever reason, whether it's founded, ill-founded or not. We had a case here where a pack of animals unfortunately did maul a little girl, and the parents wanted all the dogs in the pack put down, but only one of the dogs attacked the child, even though oftentimes, unfortunately, if there are packs, that's an even more dangerous situation.
How do you know which dog it was?
Well, they knew because they could identify it, and there were a lot of witnesses. So one of my friends defended the other three and said that they should not automatically just be put to sleep, even though they know they shouldn't have been loose. Yes, their owners should be taken to hand. There were other ramifications, but the dogs themselves shouldn't necessarily, if they did not participate in any way in this attack, necessarily be automatically put down.
Are there certain parts of the United States, I'm assuming you're more of an expert in what goes on here in this country, are there certain areas where animal rights are more respected than others?
Are you saying asking about countries or areas within the United States?
Areas within, well, both, but areas within the United States. Let's start with that.
Some communities in Maryland, for example, and another one in Boulder, Colorado area, seem to be more progressive than others. Some states seem to have less euthanized animals, a fewer number of euthanized animals per year than others. Some communities take more precautions about having their animals spayed and neutered than others. It was interesting that in some cases, animals are transported by volunteers in trucks from, I know, our community and the Charlotte community up to the New England area where those communities have gotten their stray populations completely under control and had no dogs in their shelters for people to adopt. So they were actually trucking them from this area to that area.
The county in which I live regularly, we have a phenomenal shelter here and Humane Society, and regularly sends out trucks to go pick up dogs from other parts of California where they have more than they can handle.
Yes, so that's exactly what I'm talking about. However, 10 years ago, that didn't even happen. So we are gaining, especially in certain communities. And there's an effort by the ASPCA to work with, I think it's either 10 or 12 specific model communities to replicate their efforts in other parts of the country. And I think that's great, and I encourage that. If we could only if we can do something about our population in this country, certainly we could take our successes elsewhere, like places to Russia and China, which we're trying to do in some ways anyway. I think one of the neatest things to do, and our court systems don't report cases like they do from the appellate level and above, but if we could get in our animal legal report some kind of consensus of worldwide activity and cases involving animals reported in our reports, but the reporting systems in other countries are really not as, in some cases, up to date as ours, and it's harder to get that information.
In many communities, is there some entity short of going to the courts to try to resolve disputes involving companion animals?
Oh, certainly there are. It depends, again, on the community. I've even seen small claims courts, magistrates do resolutions. I've seen the Humane Society come out locally. We've had neighbors who have dogs who bark constantly, and the Humane Society came out and got those neighbors together.
I had an interesting situation a number of years ago where my dog Farfel, who's no longer with us and whose picture you see on the Good Dog Podcast icon, his photo is there. I was walking him one morning, and an elderly man was walking a boxer, and that boxer broke away. She was on leash, but broke away, got out of control, out of the man's control, and ran over and attacked Farfel and me. And it was a real issue. I wanted assurance that that dog wasn't going to be walked on the streets of our community. I was concerned for the welfare of other people's pets. And it ended up that through our county, we went into mediation, and we, in a very civil manner, worked out a scenario where this man got a different kind of leash, where he took his dog to classes, got her under better control, and committed to only walk her at certain hours, very, very, very early in the morning, when people weren't apt to be out on the street. And it was a amenable, you know, it was a very good solution. And I appreciated the whole process and the fact that the county provided us with a mediator to help us arrive at this solution. And I'd like to think that more of that is going on.
Well, I couldn't agree more. That's the way to do it. And I'm always thinking about it, too, from the animal's point of view, from the safety of when I was a kid, I had a dog who was attacked and killed by another dog as I was walking him. and I'll never forget it.
Of course, traumatizing, and I'm sure it's what set you up for your life's work.
Well, it partly did, yes, definitely. So I'm thinking, okay, it was no fun, obviously, for the dog, and even on my own street here, we had a dog mauling case that was worked out between the two owners. In fact, the tiny little dog, it was a Boston Bull, escaped from their home, ran across the street, and got into and tried to be aggressive with two very large dogs in their pen, or in their fenced area. So to me, I just hate to see the fingers pointed and dogs put down without some sort of representation. And if anything has come out of this whole idea, it's that animals in some communities like Boulder are doing this. They're calling our animal owners guardians, and guardians have a responsibility, as do owners in my mind, to keep their dogs confined, if at all, if they're vicious or have vicious propensities. And there are different communities who have defined these. What is vicious? What is a propensity? How many bites does one dog get, and that kind of thing. A lot of communities are working on those issues because a lot of bites are happening.
Carolyn Matlock, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it a lot.
If you really love the show, please let everyone at iTunes know. You can submit a review on iTunes of Good Dog, and that'll help elevate us in the hierarchy of podcasts on iTunes. I appreciate your support. I'm Joanne Green. And once again, comments, suggestions, criticisms, praise, we'll take all of it at gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.